Hello and welcome to the Violin Geek Podcast. I'm Laurel Thompson and it feels very good to be back. It's been quite a while and I apologize for that. However, if you have been on my Facebook page recently, Laurel Thompson Music, or my duo page, Dan and Laurel, or my website, laurelthompson.com, you'll have seen there that I've been quite busy on the road. Last year I did 9 tours, about 160 dates all over the US and Canada. And this year I've already been on the road for 2 tours. So yes, it's been quite busy and quite a good time. We played, the Winnipeg Folk Festival was a big highlight, and there's just too many to count and remember. Going to Florida, that was quite cool. I'd never been there, seen baby alligators, played a bunch of shows all over the place, and this year I'm looking forward to going to Europe in the fall. So check me out and come say hi to a show. That would be fabulous. So in any case, that's pretty much the reason why it's been a while since I've put out a podcast episode. But today I'm very excited to welcome to the podcast Will Timmons. He is a professional trombone player and the creator of the website auditionbreakthrough.com, as well as some other things that he has going on, which he'll tell you about. We had a lovely conversation and we talked about this new website that he's put together. It's actually a summit, and he has quite a few different people involved giving all of their tips and tricks for basically how to audition like a pro. If you go to auditionbreakthrough.com, you'll see that that is their tagline. And from the conversation, I am pretty certain that anyone who checks this out will feel a whole lot better as they audition for their next symphony or youth orchestra or whatever you have going on. We talked about different, a hierarchy maybe of musical elements that we might want to focus on for auditioning and winning over judges. We talked about an audition prep timeline that we might want to follow in order to get well prepared. And we talked about both the musical aspects of preparation in it, as well as some of the mental aspects. So I think you're going to find it a very informative interview and kind of a companion interview for this, I would say, if you want to go back a couple years, maybe, I think it was maybe 2012, actually. I interviewed Noah Kageyama, and we talk about him quite a bit in the podcast here today. And you can go back and listen to that podcast I did with him about performance anxiety. So that would be another one to go and check out. But without further ado, I'd like to launch into this podcast. And towards the end, we'll be giving a coupon code that will be good for the next month until April 15th for you to go and become part of this summit. And if you're listening to that this after the fact, then you'll at least still have this podcast to listen to, and I have a feeling they're going to be doing this again next year. So maybe sign up on their website, on their mailing list, and get involved. Hello, Will, and welcome to the Violin Geek Podcast. How's your day going so far?
Great so far. Thanks for having me.
You are so welcome. It was a pleasure to get your email and to learn about this exciting project that you're a part of, the Audition Breakthrough Summit. And wondering if you can talk a little bit more about your landing page here, because when people go to the website, maybe you can tell us what the website is and people can scroll around if they're not driving and listening to this podcast.
Sure. It's auditionbreakthrough.com, and the tagline is mindset, strategy, flow. So basically, a lot of people struggle with auditions for various reasons, and I have been through all those struggles, and I wanted to help people overcome those barriers just like I had to. And we're not perfect, so this is all a big learning journey for all of us. So I just wanted to get some of the knowledge that was out there and compile it all into one place. So as you scroll around on the website, you'll see the people who are presenting at this year's Audition Breakthrough Summit, and you'll notice maybe some people you've heard of and some people you haven't heard of, one of which is myself, and some of the other folks are from the Bulletproof Musician blog, Dr. Noah Kageyama, a bassist from the National Symphony named Ira Gold, a French horn player who used to play with the Canadian Brass named Jeff Nelson, and all sorts of people. Claire Condit presenting on resume writing for auditions. Colin Williams is the associate principal trombone of the New York Phil, who experienced an injury to his lip and had to overcome that and win an audition after that experience. And so that's a really great interview that I did with him.
Wow.
And Jason Heath from Contrabass Conversations podcast, he compiled some of his interviews with people into a book called Winning the Audition, and he breaks down the 10 things that he saw that all of these audition winners did that were kind of a common thread, and explains those as well. So, and then I'm presenting some thoughts about how to stay positive on your audition journey, and also how to set up mock auditions when you're preparing for an audition, kind of running through your list in front of people, and how to structure those and get the most out of them. So, yeah.
Awesome. Sounds like some wonderful, different. I like how you have a lot of different people who play different instruments and coming from a lot of different angles. So,
yeah. And so each of these presents different, some of them might focus on mindset, some of them might focus on strategies for your audition, and then specifically about flow, I sat down with Dr. Noah Kageyama and really dove into what flow is, the state of flow, as far as kind of in that space where you are doing something, you're in control, but you're not in control, where time sort of floats by. It could be reading a book, it could be working in your tool shed, or it could be in your audition. We sometimes experience this state where we're in control, but things are kind of just happening, and we're allowing them to happen. And this state of flow is discussed by a famous psychologist with a very long name, and I will try to say it. It's Mihai Csikszentmihalyi is his name. So,
wow.
He wrote a book on the state of flow, and so Dr. Noah Kageyama and I really discussed that in depth. So, covering all the different bases that you need. And this could go not only for auditions, but for any performance, really. It applies to all musical performances, no matter what the situation.
That kind of brings me to, to thinking about, and we had Noah Kageyama on the podcast a few years back, thinking about, how it's interesting that playing a musical instrument or singing or, any sort of musical endeavor is very much like a sports performance. I mean, you're using your body and, you're needing to perform in the moment. And it's interesting how it seems like it's only fairly recently that people are starting to use some of the tools that it seems like sports, coaches and stuff have used for a long time. And is that what you found as well? And maybe you want to talk about that for a moment?
Sure. When I was preparing for my auditions, that's actually when I first met Noah Kageyama, and I also worked a little bit with Dr. Don Green as well, who's he started in sports psychology and worked with Olympic divers, and Noah Kageyama he came into contact with Don Green at the Juilliard School, taking a performance psychology class, basically, performance, preparation, all that stuff, how to get into the psychology behind it. And that's kind of how Noah got his start, was studying with Don Green. So I worked with both of them, and Don Green, mostly, he wasn't a musician, but he found that musicians could benefit just as well from these concepts that he was helping the Olympic divers with, about centering and getting into a mental space where you can let go and achieve your best possible outcome for your skill set. And this, these concepts definitely apply no matter what this situation. It could be Olympic diving, it could be archery, where you have to calm your breath and really steady your hands. Imagine an archer is very similar to a violinist in that way, where you have two hands controlling a very, they have to be in a very specific location and do a very smooth movement sometimes to get your best sound or to be the most accurate on the archery course. So these concepts of calming your breath and getting centered really apply to everything that needs fine motor control, including doctors, surgeons who are doing open heart surgery. You know, they have to be centered and calm, having their hands, like, controlling them without controlling them, because if you try to control them too much, they start shaking. And that's the last thing a doctor wants in the middle of open heart surgery. That's the last thing I would want my doctor to be doing. So,
maybe send him to the summit first and then say, okay, now I'll do the, now I'll go through with the surgery.
Yes. Yes. So anything that needs fine motor control can benefit from these practices of sports psychology or performance psychology, all of these things. Yes, yes. There's a great overlap. And I feel like people in the past, say 50 years ago, a violinist preparing for auditions, the auditions themselves were a little bit different back then. But some violinists happened upon these techniques or were able to calm themselves and get into this state of flow in front of people. And it, there's a certain performer, extrovert performer, that almost naturally has some of these skills, right, or they're able to ramp themselves up and get into a state where they're really putting on a performance. And that kind of eliminates some of the negative, the anxiety, the stress, if you're an extrovert and can do that. But a lot of us are not that extroverted and need help in these areas. And that's where this psychology really comes into play and can help us the most.
Awesome. So is there a difference, you know, there's that confidence and kind of performer energy that, you know, I think a lot of us can bring up when we are actually performing and we feel like there's an audience out there who's really excited to hear us, right? Versus an audition where we, you know, automatically have these people who are judging us. And there's that sense where we kind of tense up because we know that, you know, are they going to like us? Everything's on the line at that point. So in preparing for, you know, an audition, what would be the difference between preparing for a performance and an audition?
The most interesting thing about that is there literally is no difference. You have an audience of people. The only difference is two things. A screen where you cannot see your audience. And that almost is the instigator for a lot of our anxiety, because we can't see these people. We can't connect with them visually. And so we're just guessing who they are, and we're guessing what they're thinking, and that guessing really is what causes our anxiety a lot of times. But
Fear of the unknown, right?
So, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the other thing is we're not performing with other people. Sometimes we're just, I guess if you're playing a solo without you know, an accompanist or with a string quartet or something, you're playing by yourself. But in an audition, you're definitely going to be playing by yourself. And this exposed feeling can also add to our stress and anxiety. But as far as the judgment, I've been on a number of audition panels, and I can tell you that the judgment really comes after the audition panel gives you a chance. So they want you to succeed. Mm-hmm. And I, again, being on the other side of the audition panel, I know that when someone walks in, I think to myself, maybe this is the one. And then I listen to them. And if they're not the one, then we pass. And if they are, if they pique our interest and, you know, make our heads turn up and say, wow, that's nice. Then, you know, they have my vote until something, you know, perhaps they start out well and then for whatever reason they get nervous and they crash and burn. Then we need to hire someone who is comfortable under pressure or can handle these situations because our job demands that. So if they crash and burn after starting well, then we kind of have to pass on that as well. But the first thought we have is, all right, let's see what they got. Maybe this will be better than the last one. You know, that sort of thought, you know, it's always a positive thought when the next person comes in. It's never, oh, let's see how bad this person's going to be. Or it's always a positive thought. So I think if you can keep that in your head, as you walk on stage, imagine these people behind the screen thinking, maybe this is the person. We're excited to hear them. And then you start your audition with that in mind, then, you know, you can worry less about what they're thinking because you know what they're thinking. It's we want to hire this person. So
That's such a great point and so important to remember. You know, I have a lot of students who get so nervous going into auditions and performances as well, right? And, you know, I am always encouraging them to remember that the audience or, you know, whoever they're playing for is wanting them to succeed, is wanting to be there and have a good time. And I've been on a few judging panels as well. And yeah, there is that sense of you know, just, it's not as personal, I think, as we might think that it is when we're preparing for an audition and, you know, thinking that, oh, they're going to be thinking about all the other people who are so much better and then they'll hear me and, you know, all of this stuff. So, to stay positive and to know that, people are wanting you to succeed and very valuable.
One other thing that kind of plays into that is in an audition, because we cannot see our committee, our panel, we have to play for ourselves. We cannot play to please other people. First of all, you can never make someone pleased with you. That's their choice if they're pleased or not. All you can do is be pleased with yourself for presenting your performance how you want to. So if you walk into an audition and say, here's how I want this to go, and you achieve that, these goals could be, I really want to be expressive in my Mozart, or I really want to go for this high passage in Don Juan. And whatever happens, happens, and it's going to be okay. You know, if it doesn't happen, I will be okay at the end of this. But I'm really going to go for it. And if you go for it like that with those goals, it's a lot easier to say, I'm happy with how I did. Whatever happens, happens. I can't force the committee to like me. And I mean, it'd be nice if we could, but we can't force that. And so we just have to play for ourselves. And having a more internal goal than external goal of pleasing other people, looking inward helps us stay positive because we're achieving our goals, not fulfilling other people's expectations. And that really helps us a lot.
And it's a journey, right? I mean, you're not going to win every single audition. We don't have enough time in a day to win every audition and have to carry out everything that is involved in winning every single audition.
Right.
So, you know, but at the end of the day, like, for me, I always come back to, how did I feel? You know, did I feel like I was able to, maybe like this flow state you're talking about, did I feel like I was in the music? And if that was the case, then I feel like, yeah, I did a good job. That felt right, you know? To have a specific goal where, you know, people aren't beating themselves up for every single little note, and maybe it's a more focused, specific goal that they're setting for themselves, might be good.
Yeah, I like to pick a goal for every excerpt. Basically, it's a goal that improves my weakness on that excerpt. So if I... one of the trombone excerpts is from Mozart's Requiem, and it's the tuba mirum movement. And a lot of times it's a test of how pretty is your sound, but the thing that gets people is counting the rests properly. There's a few rests that are like a bar and an eighth note long, or a bar and a half long, or whatever. And if you miscount those rests, it doesn't feel right to the committee, because they continue the music in their heads during the rest. And if you're not doing that and it doesn't match up with what they're thinking, then it's just going to be jarring when you come back in. So I like to have a goal of really counting every eighth note as loudly in my head as possible during the rest, so that I know that I'm maintaining tempo. A lot of times I lose time in those rests. So I want to maintain my tempo as well as possible. And so my goal for that one would be subdivide loudly in your head, and I'd write that on my music, you know? And so before I start, I just go in my brain, I'm going ding, 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 like that. And it allows me to just kind of keep that in my head the whole time. And I can judge my success based on, did I keep that in my head the whole time? If that's my goal and I did it, then I can be happy with that, you know, go on to the next excerpt if they allow me to.
That's awesome. Goals, it actually rests.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say these goals are attainable goals. These goals are they're internal goals, and they're for pleasing ourselves and not pleasing other people.
Awesome. Yeah, I was going to say the rests, that is probably the one tip that I always have for students, because, you know, when we're practicing at home, we're often not counting the rests, and then we run some mock auditions in their lessons, and they're just taking all the time they want when it's, you know, half a measure of rests or something, or they're just barreling right in, and I'm like, you know, I think you should count those rests.
Right.
That's part of the music, too. So you recommend that as well, obviously.
Definitely.
And, you know, I mean, I would assume there wouldn't be an excerpt that would have you counting like 12 measures of rests or something. But I don't know. As a brass player, maybe there are, or?
Well, actually, it really depends on the audition committee and the audition list. I've heard of crazy stories where weird things are asked for, one of which was the Rite of the Valkyries, Wagner. And they wanted the whole piece, and the whole piece has many measures of rests. And so they wanted to hear the whole thing and feel if you're feeling this piece as if they would feel it, through the whole, some 30 bars of rest or more. I mean, it's like a really long time, and it's a real test of pulse and test of, do you know this music? Because if you're able to kind of just conduct yourself behind the screen and track the music in your head, then you're going to follow along right with the committee members and come in very closely. And I know that was a deciding factor for that audition, actually, was, well, this guy came closer on the long rests than this other guy, so we advanced him. So, yeah, it...
Wow.
There's some strange things out there, and it's good to be prepared for the strange things that could happen, which is what we practice in mock auditions. So mock auditions are not only a chance to run through music and get feedback, it's a chance to prepare yourself for unexpected events that might happen. Weird stuff that could happen is an animal could come into the room, like a bird could accidentally fly into the room, or construction sure. noise, or someone's talking on the committee. And, you know, it's very distracting if you're trying to play a soft, delicate piece and there's someone talking behind the screen. You know, these are weird things that could happen. Another audition that happened a few years ago, the power went out in the middle of the audition for this candidate, and he was so prepared, he just kept going. It didn't faze him at all. And the committee was sitting in darkness, and he was sitting in darkness playing from memory, because he internalized everything so much. And he's one of the best trombonists in the world, actually. But he was fully prepared for that psychologically. So mock auditions are where we practice these things, these crazy events that could happen. Or perhaps you can hear someone warming up on the same excerpt, you know, outside the stage. You know, practice this in your mock audition by maybe recording yourself playing an excerpt a little high on the pitch and a little faster than you want and missing a few notes, and then play that really loudly as you try to play it correctly, you know, for someone else.
That can be one of the most distracting things if you hear other music. It's very distracting. So those are great ideas. I remember Noah Kageyama talking about some of that stuff, I think more in terms of performance, but you know, inviting your friends over and having them, you know, just make a lot of noise and open candy wrappers and that kind of a thing. So I thought that was a pretty cool idea and kind of fun to, you know, probably the friends have no idea what they're up against or up to, but that's awesome.
And
this
is called adversity training. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that in the summit as well. And Noah Kageyama also talks a little bit about it in the summit as well. So adversity training, awesome. It can be really fun once you embrace it. At first, it can be really distracting and really hard to maintain focus, but it's like fun once you figure out how you can drown everything out except for what you're doing and create a little protective bubble around yourself. And you focus on your goals while all this chaos and craziness is happening around you. Things are being thrown, paper airplanes, ping pong balls, whatever your friends can think of. I did this recently with ping pong balls with a friend of mine who was taking an audition. And he started laughing really hard. And he had to find that way back to where he was focused, because I didn't let up. I said, hey, you got to get back in the zone. And I kept throwing ping pong balls at him, and finally he reached that point where it didn't matter what I was doing, and you could tell that he was so much more focused and performing a lot better after he reached that point of focus. So
that's awesome. You could to see and hear that, I imagine, was quite palpable at that point.
Yep.
Just before we leave this section, I wanted to mention again, so your website is mockauditions.com as well, where I haven't been to that website yet, actually, but it sounds like there's a lot more of this adversity training and tips there. Is that right?
There are some tips there. Mockauditions.com is mostly a video platform where you can play a 10-minute round of excerpts or solo, whatever you're working on. You can play those for an audition coach, or, again, if it's a recital, that's okay. You can play that for the coaches as well. But it's a 10-minute video that you record directly into the website through your webcam or whatever, and that gets sent to your coach. And it's a little bit like video messaging with an audition coach, and they'll send you a video back in response. And so it's similar to Skype lessons, except it's not a live experience. Your audition coach isn't there watching you do this live, but your video is recorded live into our website. So you get one chance to go through it, and then it gets sent. So it's very much a live feeling, knowing that whatever you come up with is going to be sent to your audition coach. So But we wanted to make it a little easier for your schedule. So if you and the coach live in different time zones or your schedules are just vastly different, you have time in the morning, they have time late at night. I mean, this gets rid of the scheduling aspect where you send the video to them, they send you video back as if they were coaching you live, you know, but it's just delayed by a day or two. To whenever they have the opportunity to sit down and listen fully to your recording. So I know that scheduling is a big hassle. So that's what we tried to alleviate with this platform. So yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's a great idea. I will definitely be checking that out. So let's see. Let's talk a little bit more about the preparing for an audition, and is there a specific timeline that you would recommend when, you know, someone knows that they're going to go for this audition and let's say they have 3 months to prepare? What would be the process of getting prepared for that audition?
Right. So 3 months to prepare. Oftentimes the list of excerpts may not be published until 2 months out or 1 month out. So that really changes your timeline a little bit depending on the audition. And sometimes you don't hear about the audition right away because they didn't announce it until a month and a half out or whatever the case may be. But as soon as you hear of an audition, there are a few things that you can do to put yourself in the best position for winning or doing well at that audition. The first thing is really get back into shape where you are working on extreme intonation, clarity of intonation, extreme articulation clarity, working on clarity in everything you do, because the clarity, it's what's going to come across the screen to the committee. So if your intonation's a little wonky and like that's going to come across to the committee. So you want to square away all the fundamental things, working on your scales, your arpeggios, everything that involves intonation that you can work on, do that. And one of the biggest things that people leave a little later is rhythm and time. But this is actually one of the biggest deciding factors for a committee is how good does this player perform in time? How good is their time and their sense of pulse and their feel? All of these three things are different, actually. Time, sense of pulse, and feel. They're different but connected. So just because you're playing in time doesn't mean it's going to feel right to someone. And that comes down to the inflections, the impulses that you give to the music, the flavor, if you will, where, you know, twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder what you are. All right, that's in time, theoretically, not in tune. But
no.
you can I'll try to sing it just as out of tune as that, but you can give inflection. Twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder what you are. And that gives it a whole different flavor while still being out of tune, right? So then you clean up the intonation and it becomes a lot more sparkly. Twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder what you are. And it's a whole new song, you know, and it's like, wow, this is great. Not really. I mean, I'm not a vocalist, but so working on the time, working on the impulses, working on the intonation, these are things that you can really start to work on without having a list. You know the standard excerpts that are going to be on there. I can guess Don Juan is going to be on a violin audition.
Probably going to be on there.
Yeah. And that is an extreme study in intonation and time. So use that one as sort of your benchmark and feel, too. That one has a specific feel to it that you really have to explore, because even if you play it in time, doesn't mean it's going to feel right. So the way I work on feel is to sing, and I conduct myself while I'm singing. So if I can conduct and sing the passage, it's going to give me a better sense of where these rhythmic figures happen in the bar. Is it beat three or beat four? Because those feel a little different in a bar. So I conduct myself and sing exactly. I sing it a few times so that I can kind of work out where the feel should be. And then I try to replicate that on the instrument, putting the impulses where they are in the music. A lot of players come into an audition and they play with no impulses. And what I mean by impulses is these little pulsations on certain beats. It could be the half bar, or it could be every beat. It depends on how fast or slow the music is. But look for a TED talk by Ben Zander, and he discusses impulses. A lot of people have either zero impulses, which means that everything sounds the same, or every note is an impulse, where that means everything sounds the same as well. So zero impulses or all impulses are both tasteless and kind of bland. So you want to take some of those impulses and use them strategically so that you create a more tasty piece of music that allows you to convey certain ideas. So if you want to increase the energy at a certain part, you might add more impulses, while a lyrical section doesn't have as many. It just kind of floats along, and then the energy starts ramping up and you give the half bar an impulse, and then maybe every beat, boom, 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 and leads up to a climax. That's right. One way to view it. So this is all going into things that I would do at the beginning of my preparation, regardless of when the list gets published. As soon as I hear about an audition, I go into this mode of like exploration of my time, my rhythm, and my intonation, and articulation for that matter, basics. And then about 6 weeks out, that's when I start, hopefully I have the list by then, I start playing for people. I don't have to have everything prepared in order to play for someone, because a lot of times we can get into this dangerous cycle of feeling as if we're not prepared, so we don't put ourselves out there. And that kind of leads to never feeling prepared on anything. So what I do is I like to put myself out there for a friend, a friendly face, someone who's not going to hurt me too bad, you know, is with their comments. But they can help me focus on what's not working. So I can go ahead and see, you know, if I know an excerpt but haven't polished it recently, then I'll play it for them. And it'll let me know what I need to work on. If intonation is the biggest factor, or if articulation quality is the biggest factor, they will let me know, but it'll also let me, I will be able to know pretty soon after I play it what I need to work on. And I put it out there for people because that is the skill we're going to need in the audition, right? We're going to have to play these things in front of people. So I very much subscribe to the fact of working on your excerpts in front of people, because that will help you focus on what's not working the most in performance mode. So I start that about 6 weeks out, and then I welcome feedback, because that can, you know, steer me in the right direction. And then about 2 weeks out, I don't really need the feedback, because not much is going to change, right? I've done all the work in those past 4 weeks, from 6 weeks down to 2 weeks. I've done all the work kind of putting myself in the right position for this, to perform these excerpts. Now I just need to keep performing them without the feedback, because last minute changes are not the smartest thing to do. So I try not to change too much in the last 2 weeks, maybe a week and a half, but but I still perform for people. I put myself out there and I say, hey, would you mind listening and not giving feedback? Like, just, I need a body in the room, you know, to hear me go through this stuff, get me nervous, And that's an opportunity. Those last 2 weeks are an opportunity to challenge yourself, because you're not going to get feedback from that player. You're not going to know if you impressed them. You're not going to know if you didn't live up to their expectations, because you're not getting feedback from them. It doesn't matter what they think. And it's that's the skill that I practiced in those last two weeks, is it doesn't matter what this person thinks. I'm striving to meet my personal goals for this mock audition, for this audition. And again, the last 2 weeks, I challenged myself with my personal goals. And then because you've performed for so many people, it could be the same person over and over. It could be a new person every day. But maybe you've played for people 25 times leading up to your audition. That's an incredible amount of performing for people. Your audition,
yeah, that's awesome.
Your audition is not going to feel as much of a pressure situation, because you've been putting yourself in that same situation for weeks, you know, playing for people. So it's going to start to feel a little more normal. And that's what you want on audition day, is to feel the same as every other day and feel like you've been there before. You've been in this audition situation before because you practiced it with your mock auditions. So with mock auditions, I encourage, if you can, find a screen of some sort. It could be a divider that you come up with, or it could be a screen of some sort that you purchase. I have like a photo backdrop sort of thing that I use for photography sometimes, so I can put that up, and it's black or green. I have two different colors, and I can put that up and divide the room into two. It doesn't matter how big the room is, I can still divide it. So yeah, I'm kind of rambling on and on, but 6 weeks out, I start playing for people. 2 weeks out, I stop getting feedback, so that I can feel the same on the day of the audition. I don't change my diet. I don't change anything. I will say, when I do start to take an audition, say if it's 2 months out, if it's that far out, I might take myself off of caffeine, like coffee. I might take myself off of alcohol, and just kind of clear any of those affecting substances. The caffeine can ramp you up, alcohol's a depressant and can you know, make you sleepy, all this stuff. It throws off your sleep cycle, and I do try to sleep more as I approach an audition, just because I know my brain functions better with more sleep. You know, 6 hours versus 10 hours, you know, there's a big difference there. So
there's a big difference. And I remember, I think it was also Noah Kagiyama in his blog talking about some studies that were done where I think someone wanted to, they only had half the time to practice or something like that, maybe for an audition or a performance. And so they ended up taking naps between practices to, you know, they're practicing two times a day and they're taking a nap in between, and they got twice as much results from this, because the sleep, they're able to I think things sink in deeper, and they're able to process everything that they've been practicing. So I thought that was a pretty cool,
definitely
pretty cool thing. And
and I'll add to
sleep
that,
is so important.
I'll add to that Tim Ferriss, you can look him up. I think there's two R's and two S's on his last name.
Ferriss. So yeah, Tim's great,
and he made this little TV show. I think it was about 10 episodes long, but he challenged himself to do a lot of incredible things, very difficult things, in a short amount of time. One of which was this ancient, I don't even know what you call it. Basically, he had to ride a horse in this old school saddle, which basically meant you had to stand up the whole time. And he had to shoot three targets as he took this horse running full speed down this chute. And he had to like shoot three targets as he passed them with a bow and arrow. And it's really incredible, but he broke down the skills that he needed to use. And he woke himself up every 4 hours to reinforce the skill. You know, after one REM cycle, he would wake up, reinforce the skill, go back to sleep, so that he learned it twice as fast. And it worked. And basically, yeah. he put himself in sort of a tricky situation, but if he did not succeed, the typical ritual of the town, I think it was in Japan, was to kill the person who failed. He really took on a big challenge here, but he did succeed. And that process of seeing him incorporate these sleep cycles into his learning was really impressive, and I got a lot out of that.
That's awesome. Yeah, he has a podcast people can check out if they haven't already. And yeah, he's always doing some kind of crazy human guinea pig experiment on himself. And a lot of the stuff that I have heard through his podcast and through his books can directly be applied to music, I think. So
definitely
something to check out. And I was wanting to maybe move us into, you know, a lot of my students or listeners out there, maybe not trying out for, you know, a huge symphony, but maybe it's, you know, the local youth orchestra, and, you know, sometimes they're blind auditions, sometimes they're not. And most of the time they're going to have some sight reading. So I wanted to maybe see if there's any tips you have for that, as well as, like I had one student recently, and she got her audition material. Well, she got some of her audition materials a few weeks before the audition, and this was like for a regional youth orchestra. And then she got one piece of music like literally the day before, and we had like an emergency lesson to go over this stuff. And at that point, we had to kind of talk about, okay, like we need to kind of pick our battles here. You're not going to be able to play this perfectly by tomorrow. Like it's just not going to happen. But you know, let's pick our battles. Let's figure out, you know, we need to have, you know, in this case, I recommended, you know, let's make sure the intonation is good. Let's figure out all of our shifts and all of our fingerings. That's kind of the first thing. And then between now and tomorrow, you're just going to put the metronome on, and we're going to try and make this in time. And we couldn't really talk about phrasing as much. Of course, you know, she's typically, you know, has a pretty good musical sense in general. So, you know, it's not going to sound robotic necessarily with that student. But, you know, is there kind of like a hierarchy of musical elements that maybe one should focus on that will win over judges? You talked about timing earlier. Obviously, if someone is especially going out for, you know, maybe a principal or concertmaster type role, gosh, you know, you better be able to lead everyone and keep the timing. But what would you be your recommendation for something like that if someone just didn't have enough time to really get everything perfectly?
Right. So I secretly did this earlier in our podcast where I sang something really out of tune, but I sang with decent time. And that is the most important rhythmic consistency, rhythmic accuracy, sense of pulse is the most important musical quality as far as conveying a musical idea. So I'm going to sing another song out of tune without words, and I want you to tell me what it is, all right?
Okay.
All right, here we go. Bum, 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 bum. Any idea what song that would be?
Yeah, I had it as soon as you were singing it, and now I forgot.
Bum 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 bum. Jingle bells, right?
Yeah, jingle bells. Yeah.
No pitches involved, and that's a generic rhythm right there. Eighth, eighth, quarter, eighth, eighth, quarter, eighth, eighth. Right. You know, like it's very, very basic rhythm, but you could tell what song it was almost immediately. And I use that one a lot. The pitches aren't really involved there. I mean, we're latching on to a musical rhythm, and it conveys so much that we don't even need the notes. So yes, I would say focus on, your listeners are going to think I'm the most awful singer ever, but I loved it. So I would say focus on the rhythm and the sense of pulse way more than note accuracy or intonation accuracy, even though those are very nice to have when sight reading. The rhythm is going to show the people that you know how this piece should sound, like rhythmically. If you have a solid presentation of the rhythm, they'll give you another try on the intonation or playing the right note or whatever. I strongly feel that. So
having the feel and yeah.
And even like accents and all of that stuff go into the rhythmic feel. So if you can focus on those elements first, making it sound and feel right, then the notes will follow. You know, you can get the notes after a few tries. But if you don't understand the rhythm, then I'm more concerned. Can I get you up to speed to play with me, you know, if we're playing together? That's what I am thinking in my head. If I hear someone play with poor rhythm, it's like, how much do I have to teach them? You know, I can teach them notes really quick. Oh, that's a C sharp, not a C natural. Done, right? But okay, I'm having to pull you along in my mind, you know, like, come on, let's keep the rhythm moving. Let's get through this.
Right.
Stop restarting or stop going back a bar to get that note. That kind of leads to the next advice is never stop. Keep the rhythm going. Keep the time
going.
I mean, if you look at a clock, it doesn't stop unless it dies, but it doesn't stop ticking. It keeps moving forward. And we have to kind of keep up with it. If time starts moving and we start playing and then we kind of skip backwards, we're like a broken record. And sometimes it's a bad broken record because we can't play it right.
Yeah.
No matter how many times we try it. So just keep going. Keep going to the end. And sight reading is a skill that you can practice. It's not a natural gift. So I have this. I'm a trombone player, but cello music is, you know, same clef that I can read it very easily. Same range, general range. So I have this big book of 500 sight reading exercises that they're about 20 bars long, 15 bars long, something like that. But they're pretty challenging sometimes. And if I know I have to sight read something, I'll open that book and I will read three or four. And my main goal is don't stop and play the rhythm right. And, you know, if I get all the notes, that's good. But generally, I can kind of get into the zone where I'm reading the rhythms and not stopping. And I can look ahead a little bit to the notes. And that's the zone where you want to be in. You want to see what's coming a little bit ahead of when you get to it. Kind of like if you're driving, you're looking down the road. You're not looking at the, you know, the 5 feet in front of your car. You probably hit something pretty quickly if you're only doing that and driving 60 miles an hour. So, definitely looking where you're going and not worrying about so much what's in the moment as what's coming. Because if something goes wrong in the moment, it's past at this point. And you can fix what's coming if you're looking ahead. So, those three things. The rhythm's most important. Don't stop and look ahead. That's what I would suggest.
Awesome. Those are awesome points and so important. And, you know, I'm realizing that between violin and trombone, there is kind of a similar way that we have to find our intonation and, it's not automatic like a piano or something, right?
Right.
And so I think, you know, maybe we have kind of some similar challenges with where we're trying to nail all of those notes, but, you know, having to just barrel on and as if basically you're in a performance, you're in a symphony and no one's going to stop for you, right?
Right.
So, being able to find a way in your practice where you're not going to stop. And I find a lot of students, if they hear a wrong note, they stop and they wait to fix it. And it's really hard to get students to play with a metronome from the beginning and just keep that rhythm going. And in a sense, I feel like it, and I don't know if you feel this as well, but it does actually help the intonation because there's a certain sense of timing with our shifts or with getting our fingers around the instrument, and I imagine with the trombone as well, that has to fit into that, you know, the intonation, finding the intonation has to fit in with the timing.
Yeah, so, and I would say part of that is actually if we do not allow ourselves to go back and try again, then our brain kind of speeds up a tad. It starts thinking little quicker and anticipating it's learning what's coming next and making those changes in our brain pathways a little faster. And so I would say if you're sight reading every day, that would be good, regardless of if you have an audition or regardless of if you're, you know, have a recital coming up or whatever. Just sight read one little thing every day. And there are books out there for sight reading. And if there's not, then let me know. I'll write one. I mean, sight reading is that important. And I've written for where I work for our auditions, there's always sight reading. It's a military band. So there's always sight reading on the auditions. And for some of the auditions, I wrote the sight reading for them. So not to try to trick people, but to try to make a musical sight reading that makes sense. And allows them to show off the skills that they have while also being challenging as far as continuing to go and catch all the accidentals or the interesting intervals and all that stuff. So, if there's not a violin sight reading book out there, let me know, because I could maybe churn one out and give you guys some
practice.
There's
certainly a lot of repertoire out there, and, you know, it's excerpt books and different things. I don't know if I've actually seen a specific sight reading book. I probably have, but I always, you know, send people the way of like there's different etudes that are more musical the
etudes
excerpts or, you know, just different things that can combine a lot of different elements and, like you said, different accidentals or and it's nice. The etudes are nice because they're often focused on one or two certain elements, a bowing thing or a rhythm thing or, you know, a certain key or whatever. So,
Right. You
know, able to kind of focus on different things, you know, whereas maybe in an audition, a sight reading piece might have a lot of different elements, but at least in practice, we can kind of see what we need to really work on and build it up that way. So,
right.
Yeah. So do you have any recommendations for the day of the audition and ways to maybe get centered and get into that flow state you've been talking about? And
sure. I'll try to be quick with this, but basically don't change anything that puts you outside of what you've practiced. So if you've been doing your mock auditions and playing for people like 20 to 25 times before this day, then seeing other people and being prepared for weird things to happen is going to feel a little more normal. And so you just approach it like another one of those normal days, as far as your diet goes, your exercise, anything that would possibly change how your day goes, just keep it the same as possible. If you normally talk to your mom at 8 a.m., try to talk to your mom at 8 a.m. and be normal about it, you know,
just
like whatever.
Be normal, yeah.
Yeah. So there's that. Now, at an audition, you will see other people there for the audition. So if those people approach you because they know you, that's one thing. If you're sort of one of those people who need your space to like stay in the zone, then bring some headphones. Headphones are kind of a universal sign of I'm not listening to you. I'm listening to whatever I'm listening to, and I need a moment. And auditions are kind of weird. Like, I'm social, in not extremely social, but if I see someone I know, I'll say, hey, how's it going? What you been up to? Great. And typically those are people who are the same way, who just like to see people they know and check in. For me, it makes me feel more comfortable if they're actual friends of mine. Like, hey, man, what you been up to? You know, and not really talk about the audition. Just, I mean, we're both there and both probably had the same mindset of you know, this might not work out because there's 100 other people here, you know, like, doesn't mean I lost something, you know, we're going to be the same people tomorrow that we are yesterday. And, it's just, I like to approach auditions as a learning experience, honestly. So the social thing doesn't really bother me too much because I'm there to learn anyways. So, yeah, and as far as growth goes, showing up to an audition with a growth mindset, something kind of thinking about it as I want to take something away from here today that makes me better. So I'm going to try for these personal goals, and I'm going to learn what worked and what didn't, and I'll try to improve on that next time. So if you approach it with that mindset and you try not to change too many things, the day of should be a pretty stress-free audition. There's always butterflies. You know, I think back to my dating days. I'm married now, but when you first meet someone and you're interested, there's these little butterflies in your stomach. That's excitement. That's not nerves. That's not anxiety. That's pure excitement. And it's okay to have nerves, but I like to feel those little butterflies on audition day. Like, all right, I've really prepared for this. I'm excited. Like, let's do it. And those those little butterflies can actually enhance your performance. Noah Kageyama is a source of a lot of this content, but he talks about how it's kind of like a little adrenaline boost. I mean, adrenaline is something our bodies use to get us out of some pretty serious situations. Like, say if we're fleeing from an animal that could harm us, I mean, we have adrenaline, right? So it actually pumps up our performance. And so it can help us in the same way in auditions as well. So that little bit of excitement, as long as it's not too much, because then sometimes too much adrenaline is, you know, a negative factor, but a little bit can actually pump us up to where we need to be to perform our best on that day. So I like to feel those little butterflies as a sense of excitement and a little bit of adrenaline. But yeah, overall, the audition day should feel pretty normal, except for those butterflies, and those are good.
Exactly. And hopefully, you know, as you're talking about doing mock auditions and stuff, people have prepared where they've had their friends over, you know, played for a few people where maybe they felt those butterflies too because it was new, right?
Right.
And then it's not going to be such a new thing. I think what's so scary about the butterflies is like, wow, normally when I'm practicing at home, I don't feel these butterflies at all. How am I going to play through this, right?
Exactly.
So, so hopefully in that preparation process, people have explored that a little bit and know that they can still perform through that. And maybe, like you say, they've even explored how that might enhance their performance a little bit. So
definitely.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, is there anything else you'd like to mention about the Audition Breakthrough Summit? I would like to hear a little bit about your story as we wrap up here and how you came to this. But anything else about the actual summit that you'd like to mention?
Well, I'll mention that the Access Pass is only available up until April 15th. So if you want to gain access to the 9 videos that are going to be a part of this virtual conference, you got to buy your Access Pass before April 15th. Otherwise, you'll have to wait till next year's summit, where we'll feature many other people. And we might try to have some of the, like Dr. Noah Kageyama, we might have him back next year as well. He's just such a wealth of information. So, but the 9 videos are available for purchase up until April 15th. And with the summit and my other website, mockauditions.com, both of these are projects out of my desire to help people. All right. So I went through all of this journey myself, and I've, like I said, I'm in one of the premier military bands in DC. So I was able to win an audition up against 100 other people. And so I faced all of these challenges, and I have always had a desire to help people. And so these are just two projects that I have created in order to help people be their best. And I've always coached people. So going back in my story, I did the usual undergrad, grad school thing. I went to my undergraduate in South Carolina, where I'm from, and did my graduate degree in Cincinnati at the Cincinnati College Conservatory of Music. And in my second year there, I auditioned for the New World Symphony, which is an orchestra in Miami. It's a fellowship program, and it was created by Michael Tilson Thomas, who's the conductor, music director of the San Francisco Symphony. So I was accepted to the New World Symphony, and I moved to Miami, and I played there for two seasons. And Michael Tilson Thomas, MTT, he conducts the New World Symphony 10 weeks out of the season. So it's about a 34-week season, and he's there for 10 of the weeks, which is just an amazing experience to be coached by, basically conducted and put through these performances of great repertoire led by a genius. I mean, he's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And that experience really made me fall in love with being an orchestral musician. So while I was at New World Symphony, I also met Noah Kageyama. He's sort of the resident psychologist who comes down and coach people through their, give people the mental tools they need to win their auditions. And we would have our coaching sessions and then continue those over the phone as well after, if he was not there. But I got to know him pretty well, and now with my job, I come to New York every now and then, and I'll see Noah. So I actually came up to New York to film his portion of the summit with him, and that was a great experience. But so in my second year of the New World Symphony, I auditioned for a number of orchestras, and finally for the Air Force Band. And like I said, I was up against 100 people, but because of the way that I had been practicing, it felt like any other day, and I was pretty calm and collected the whole day, kind of letting the whole experience wash over me. Luckily, I was the person they chose, and I've been doing that for 6 years now. So, yeah.
Wow. Awesome. Congratulations. That's Thanks. Wonderful.
I've also been fortunate enough to play in the orchestras around here. So I've performed with the Baltimore Symphony and the National Symphony a few times now. That's given me sort of this continual orchestral experience with great conductors and all of these things. So I've had a good time, and I've been sort of dedicated recently to putting myself out there to help other people, you know, have similar experiences and positive experiences in their journey as well. So.
Awesome.
Well, just any closing thoughts, maybe as far as any inspirations or kind of profound experiences you might've had, or quotes from Michael Tilson Thomas or somebody who might have inspired you along the way?
Well, I will bring up one experience with Michael Tilson Thomas. And it was a week when we were performing Mahler Symphony No. 5, Mahler 5. And there's a pretty intense moment in the second movement that has a Mahler is so great because the way that he builds up to this climactic moments are, it's just beautiful and powerful, and brass love Mahler because it's so expressive and so powerful in his use of the brass. And so we love it. But there's one section that has a French horn lead up to it. And then the first trombone, which I was performing that part that week, it continues that same figure into a very big moment. And maybe I can send you an audio file that matches up with this story. But
well, that'd be awesome.
Just before the concert began, the personnel manager came and got me and was like, Michael wants to see you right now. And I was like, this the first thing that goes into my head is like, this isn't good. And so yeah. I walk briskly to his dressing room, and I walk in, and he's kind of excited to see me. He's like, Will, okay, come over here. And he sits down with the score, and he's flipping through. Oh, where is it? Where is it? Yes, right here. Can you play that a lot louder? And that's like the best thing that anybody could ever want to hear as a brass player. And and after thinking that you were in trouble. So it ended up being fine. And it was a really incredible spot in the music. And when we got to it in the concert, I just felt this sort of energy leading up to it because, first of all, the music is building up. But then I knew that this is the spot we talked about. This is the spot. And
you get to just go for it, yeah.
Exactly. So I definitely went for it. And I asked him, you know, to help get my sound out, could I pull my bell up into the air and kind of point it out over the orchestra? And he said, yes, let's do that. And so so we got there.
Cool.
And you know, he's conducting along, and then very intensely, he stared right at me and gave me the finger, like, you play right now. And I just went for it. And that feeling, that connection between two people in the middle of a performance and in the middle of such an intense moment in the music was something that I've almost never felt before. And just after that, I found myself like shaking from the adrenaline rush of doing that in performance. Yeah. And it was so incredible. So I'll send an audio file of that that little clip, and maybe we could play that here as well.
That's awesome. I can feel the excitement just you talking about it. And just, you know, it's so interesting in music. I mean, it's all happening in time and then it's gone, right?
Yes. But
those certain moments and how sometimes they can just stay with you, that feeling of that excitement and that power that really only, a big orchestra like that can give us, I think. That's awesome. Yeah, I would love to share that little clip with the listeners. So please send that along for sure.
Sure.
Well, thank you so much for sharing all of these good tips and stories and ideas and getting in touch about the Audition Breakthrough Summit. And so again, it's auditionbreakthroughsummit.com. And
it's auditionbreakthrough.com. Sorry.
.com. Okay.
Yeah. Auditionbreakthrough.com.
Breakthrough.com. And we will have like a little code that will help people get a little bit of a discount, right?
Yeah,
Until April 15th.
Let's use Violin Geek is your coupon code. And that will give you, it should be about a third of the price of what's listed on the website, which is the original price before kind of the early bird price. So you get a pretty steep discount there. So.
Awesome. And as far as just to clarify, so April 15th would be the cutoff to purchase, but then after that, people would still be able to see the videos, or how does that work?
Right. So if you purchase your access pass by April 15th, then you will have a full year to keep accessing the videos. So you'll get a login and you can log into the website and check out the videos for 12 months. And that's for the premium access pass. And the VIP access gives you lifetime access. So if you buy the VIP access pass, anytime you have an audition over the next however many years, you can come back and be re-inspired by some of these videos and be reminded of tools, techniques that are shared, and lifetime access. And there's also, with the VIP, you can you will be invited to join our private Facebook group that has the presenters in the Facebook group, so you can ask any questions specific to any of the presenters and get feedback directly from them. So that's an extra perk of the VIP access pass. Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I hope that people go and check it out. You know, there's really not that much that I've seen out there, a little bit more in recent years as far as auditions. And I've seen a couple summer programs coming out that focus on auditions. And it's nice that people are talking about it and not kind of leaving all of this just, I think maybe people don't want to think about it, right?
So, right.
But putting it out into the light so people can feel like they can really master their own, you know, feelings and anxieties and then the preparation side. So it's really awesome, and I was very happy to get your email. So thank you so much.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for having me.
So thanks again to Will Timmons for coming and joining us on the Violin Geek podcast. You can check out the website auditionbreakthrough.com and use the coupon code VIOLINGEEK in order to get a pretty significant discount until April 15th, 2017 on the summit. And thereafter, please sign up on their mailing list to get further information about next year's summit. Again, I am Laurel Thompson, and my website is laurelthompson.com. You can also check out my duo site, danandlaurel.ca, which goes for California and Canada, which is where the two of us are coming from for that duo. And my vibrato course, which I've talked about in the past, is up to about 150 students now, and people are really enjoying it. So you can check that out at completevibratomastery.com. If you've been enjoying the little gypsy jazz clips that you've been hearing on the podcast today, those are from a piece that I wrote called Rough 9-6, and it's on a CD that I released in, I think it was 2013, called Light and Shadow. So you can go find that via my site or on iTunes. And finally, you know, I always like to receive listener feedback. Whether you have a question or a concern, or you'd like to have me cover a certain topic or interview a certain person, I'm all ears. And you can send me an email. My email is laurel@laurelthompson.com. That's laurel@laurelthompson.com. And just so you know, I have followed up with every one that you have suggested, and I much appreciate that. And if you haven't seen any of those people on the podcast yet, it's just because they were either unresponsive to my inquiry or we just haven't been able to work out a date. One person that I'm hoping we can eventually get on the podcast is Lucia Micarelli from the Treme Show, and I've been in touch with her manager for the last couple years, actually. I think it's maybe been 3 years, and every time they're very responsive, but they're just not quite ready to do interviews. So you know how it goes. Anyhow, please send me an email if you have a suggestion, and I will try my very best to make it happen. So until then, until next time, I hope you have a great day out there, and happy practicing.